In 2018 and 2019, St. John's Lutheran Church of Northfield, Minnesota is conducting oral histories of its members. My name is Judy Carlson, and today I will be interviewing St. John's members Dave and Ruth Leitvold, longtime members of the congregation. Welcome, Dave and Ruth. I'm looking forward to hearing your St. John's story. Let's start out by sharing, if you would, how it is that you ended up at St. John's. How did you find this church?
Well, I grew up in this congregation. My family moved here when I was in third grade, and so we were members here through my elementary, junior, and high school days. And then when David and I were married, after I finished St. Olaf, we moved to Bloomington, Minnesota, and belonged to a church there. We lived there 11 years. And then he finally talked me into moving to a farm back here. And so we've been here since 1976. And it was our idea when we moved back to Northfield that we would visit various congregations and see which one fit our family. Well, we came to St. John's first and stayed. Carolyn Jennings saw us and welcomed us, and I thought, okay, this fits. And David agreed, and so we've been members since then.
Here you are. Uh-huh.
Actually, we asked our sons if they would like to go to Bethel. Nope. All our friends are at St. John's. No Bethel. So that took care of that.
So they were influential in your final decision.
Yeah.
And that was 1976?
Yep.
How many years ago is that? Well,
a lot. 43.
Yeah. Yes.
43, yes. Yeah.
And so Carolyn was welcoming to you. What else drew you here? Your children said yes, their friends?
Music, definitely the music.
Yeah.
Wonderful choirs, choir opportunity for our children and us. And
the music. And you knew by then, perhaps, that you would participate in the music.
Right, we jumped into choir, so
we did. Were you in choir too,
yeah.
Dave?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else about your children? That is, let's talk a little bit about their involvement here too.
Well, they were singers, and so I think they were in choir all along, and that was a pivotal part of their life. And when they were in junior high, well, elementary, junior high, and senior high, they were singers. So I think it was a nice fit to have St. John's as a basis and then get the educational component in the public schools.
And when they started with their instrumental playing, they played on Easter Sunday too with the brass group because they did a combination of adults and youth. High school students for the brass group.
So music and children and welcoming, all parts of your coming back. You're coming back. And where had you been before, Dave?
I was born and raised in Northfield, but we attended the what was the Christian and Missionary Alliance Church, which is now Cornerstone.
Oh.
And my grandma warned me about having anything to do with Catholic girls and Lutheran girls and all of that. And then I began to backslide. And I took up with a Lutheran minister's daughter. And it seemed appropriate that I would become a Lutheran.
And what did your grandmother think of that?
Oh, she got to know Ruth, and she loved Ruth, and that was just fine.
That was it.
She was a woman of good character and a delight. So that was fine, which kind of clouded over this provincial thought that if you weren't one of us, you weren't worthy. And that was a troubling component of that particular background. But interestingly enough, my ancestors who settled in Faribault County were part of the Haughey Lutheran tradition. And when they moved to Northfield, they checked out the existing Lutheran churches, but found them to be too hoisinic, too high church. So they found a church that was more informal, and that seemed to fit.
Interesting history there for you. Well, I know that both of you have been very involved in leadership roles and service. Let's talk a little bit, or would you talk a little bit about going back those 40 years?
Well, I grew up singing in the choirs here, and then when David and I joined, we joined the adult choir. And then in 1987, fall of 86, Joni Halverson, who was directing the high school age choir, then retired from that position, and my sons encouraged me to seek that position. I thought, okay, and because they were singing in that choir then. So I did, and I was hired, and it became just the love of my life, directing that choir. And I did it for 28 years, and it was the love of my life to do that.
What did you love about it?
Oh, being with high school age students and making music with them. What delightful people. And then I started the tradition that is still going of a Christmas Eve service inviting high school choir alumni to return and join the present choir and sing for the 11 o'clock Christmas Eve service. And having singers return to sing and seeing them and still being part of their lives, even in that bit, and making wonderful music together. That was the high point of my Christmas celebration, too. Sorry, family, but it was. And so that was what I did. And now that I'm not doing that, we are back singing with the adult choir again, which is delightful too. Mm-hmm. So, but David did Sunday school, and he can talk about that.
Mm. I taught a course. It was entitled Our Neighbor's Faith. Some of the folks that we knew in the church where we attended in Edina were district personnel, just Lutheran church educators, Lutheran church various roles, and so I knew some of the people who had written this curriculum, and it was good. So all throughout the year, we would study a particular denomination, say Catholic, one Sunday, and kind of get the basics of that faith, and then I would arrange a visit to go and worship in that particular church. And we just had some wonderful experiences. And the kids were really involved. I'd taught the same course when we were worshiping in Edina. I had picked on a particular church where the minister was the father of one of my students, actually a couple of my students, and it was an Assemblies church. I took my group there, and throughout the service there was some excitement, but at the end there was an altar call and people went forward and there was weeping and wailing and all of it. And one of my students leaned forward and said, Dave, what are they doing to them? And I said, it's okay. Because that had been somewhat a part of my upbringing.
Yes, it
was with just, altar calls
just
and,
thinking about that.
And that kind of thing. So I really enjoyed working with senior high people in the education part and going out and visiting other churches and building an understanding. And some folks brought forward the idea that there might be a risk. You know, if you're taking these young people out to other churches, what if they find one they like better than St. John's? So be it. Good for them. And so that went on for a while. Then I did other things with the youth of the congregation, which was really fun. Did big art projects that we hung from the ceiling or the beams of the church. For Pentecost, we would hang tongues of fire with names of saints and various other things that gave a visual component to the worship experience and a means of participation for these young people. And then, let's see, I think it was about 1990, or actually 88, I was asked to be the vice president of the congregation. And of course, with that goes the understanding that you will move in to be nominated and elected as the president. So I did that. And during that tenure, there was a sizable building project at St. John's, including a new organ. And so with my friend John Ferguson as the consultant, a lifesaver, we went through the process of reviewing several organs in the Twin Cities, listening to them, and decided on a Dobson organ, which was built in Orange City, Iowa. So Ferg and I went down to see the organ when it was in pieces, before there was any beautiful paint or anything, and a gentleman was voicing the trumpets. Just had the trumpet pipes alone, no case or anything around him. And it sounded so awful. I could not believe how strident and how blatty this sounded. I thought, oh my goodness, this is not going to be good. But I was reassured that when everything was put together, this was going to be a stunning instrument. And indeed it was. So when it came to the congregational meeting, when we would decide on the budget and so on, I was accosted by a longtime member. Why do we have to have a new organ when we already have one? But the previous organ had some mechanical and just placement liabilities being hung from the ceiling of the church, and that was not good.
Whoa.
And then my comment, which was a little bit snippy, just said, it's like getting a nice new car. Here we have this beautiful church addition. It's going to improve the way our church works. And it's no sense to buy a car without tires. And the organ will put the wheels under this congregation. And it's actually known in circles of people who speak organ that the St. John's organ was one of the best iterations that the Dobson Company has done to date. So we're really, again, we're very, very fortunate. After my term as president of the congregation, I thought, oh boy, that's great, that's over. And then one of the eight boilers that we had downstairs blew up or burned up or something. And Pastor Svensson came to me and he said, I really need somebody to serve as the boiler liaison, because he knew I had good mechanical sense and knew how mechanical stuff worked. So I moved right from being president to, I think it was a promotion.
You're not sure though.
I went to being the boiler liaison. And that was an experience, a valuable experience,
yes,
too.
And was there a new boiler involved in that?
Yeah, we had to redo quite a few things, and there was a lack of some safety equipment that should have kicked in when the boiler overheated.
I would like to backtrack to the organ and the gentleman who was not happy initially. How did he come into the fold then?
Oh, it was a lady.
It was a lady. My apologies to her.
And I think she was reasonably well-to-do, and she didn't get that way by spending a lot of money.
She was careful with her money.
Uh-huh. So she was careful.
So personally, her personal values were, she was concerned about the church and the budget and things like that.
Yeah.
And did she come to appreciate?
I think so. I mean, it was just such a wonderful unveiling of this organ. Interesting little side story about the design, the case, the artistic rendering of the organ. At the time, Ed Sevick was involved, and as an architect, he had some things to say. So I had a huddle with Lynn Dobson, who was the builder, and I said, you know, it would be, I think, a good move if we would have the blue trim on the organ correspond with the blue of the ceiling of the church. In fact, why don't you call that St. John's blue? That's all it took. The color was great as long as it was St. John's blue. If it had been sunset blue, wouldn't have gone.
Very, very, very good.
So there was a lot of the working with people that was sometimes frustrating, but always pretty rewarding.
Mm-hmm. And this is the same organ we have now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's been how many years ago?
Oh man, what, 20? So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, 30.
Yeah. Yeah. And mechanically, this is a wonderful organ because it was so well built. The previous organ, our dear friend and wonderful musical presence, G. Winston Kassler, would sometimes say, David, come here. The door's rattling. Fold up a bulletin and jam it in that damn door. Because he would express himself rather graphically. And then occasionally there would be a cipher, a pipe that would turn off. So he would say, go up and pull such and such a pipe. You'll hear it in there. Just pull it out.
Oh, my gosh.
So that organ had a lot of difficulties. And it wasn't worth redoing the whole thing. It was much better to just sweep the slate clean and start over with Dobson.
Dobson.
Yeah.
What happens to, and what happened to then the old organ?
Well, it had a stop called a trumpet en chemin, a shelf trumpet. You know, the trumpets would stick out into the congregation from the organ case, and they were loud and strident, and some church thought, oh, that's really great. We want to buy that. So part of it was sold, and I think maybe Dobson was able to take some of the ranks and reuse them in new construction, if you voiced it properly.
And was Winston Kassler then the organist here at St. John's for some period of time?
Yes.
What, do you know the time frame? I wonder if that was before my time.
Gosh, I don't know.
Yeah.
He was here when we came.
Yes. He was playing when I was growing up. In fact, he lived next door to us on St. Olaf Avenue. And then he still was playing. Not for every service.
Yeah. He was just a lovely man who referred to our two beautiful young sons as your little brats.
Yeah. But what a sweetheart. I saw him in the grocery store one time when I had our younger son, Mark, home because he was ill. And I told him that Mark was homesick, so I needed to get home quickly. And he bought a package of chocolate-covered marshmallow cookies, you know, the cookie crust and then a marshmallow and then chocolate, and came and brought it to me and said, take this home to your brat.
So brat became a really quite
it was
loving
a,
term.
It was a loving term.
Term of endearment,
yes,
as
it
they
was.
Say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after the boiler blow-up thing, then I moved on to being a confirmation mentor. And that was really nice to meet with young people and just talk about life. We were given a slate of questions to talk about every week, and we never really adhered to that list very well. In fact, I think two or three of my students joined me in a climb up to the bell tower. And we went up there so that they could see this thing that called them to worship. And on the bell is inscribed a passage of scripture and the names of the people who donated the bell. And it's just a big piece of machinery up there, but very significant. And then we took crayons and paper, and they did a rubbing of those, of the scripture that's on the bell. And those are in the days when if you wanted to do something like that, you did it. Now you'd have to have the permission of the safety committees and all of that.
Parents
to
and
do
insurance
it.
And...
Yeah. So there were some things we could do at St. John's that we adhered to the philosophy that forgiveness is easier to get than permission.
And it worked, it seems like.
Well, actually, one of the students asked me that. Why is forgiveness easier to get than permission? And I said, you better go ask Pastor Joseph that one.
What have you seen as changes? And as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, oh, there's one that you just mentioned about forgiveness and permission. But other changes that you've seen over the years that you've been a part of St. John's?
Liturgy, you know, going from one colored hymn book to another. But basically, this congregation has been vital and wonderful to be with. And we have the whole age range. Sometimes people comment that everybody here is old, but that's not true. We do have younger people, younger families as well. Maybe not as many as there were at one time, but we do have the whole age range. I like the fact that we stick pretty much to the traditional worship service and sing the hymns that I grew up singing, that I know my grandparents sang, you know, that have been part of the Lutheran tradition particularly for several hundred years. I feel like I'm linked then to past generations in this music, and that feels wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Very soul satisfying.
Yes.
It sounds like.
Yep.
I'm very happy that St. John's maintained a course of stability. When some churches split the congregation into two, and we had a contemporary service, and we had the traditional service, I don't think it took too long before people understood and it was spoken that it's all the people in the traditional service who pay the way of this congregation. So who are you to come in here and disrupt things with this contemporary stuff? And I think St. John's had a great deal of wisdom in doing that. And I think the quality of the music was such that I didn't think there was a longing for people to do something different. So, for example, when Ruth worked with her choir, it was great music of faith that was challenging, that was quality, that had stood the test of time, and there was no opportunity for those kids to sing "Our God is an Awesome God," you know, 22 times, and then that was it. This was quality stuff, and I think it really touched the hearts and souls of those young people. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it was a heavy component of the youth program at this church.
Interesting. Oh. What are your hopes for St. John's going forward?
Stay the course. Continue what we've been doing. One thing that has happened in recent years is that St. John's is being more intentional in inviting community people. So, for instance, for Wednesday evening dinners, a Christmas dinner, the community is invited to come to, and they do. Mm-hmm. In fact, our neighbor and his wife, who belong to Bethel, come to Christmas dinner here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was very apparent that the move that Pastor Pam, I think it was Pastor Pam, and Father Denny at St. Dominic's made to combine the Thanksgiving service. And we had a part in that, but what was really interesting was to see the tremendous amount of conversation among friends, not the Catholics and the Lutherans, but friends from the community who were brought together to worship. And I thought, wow, what a cool thing to bring the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church together in this format. And it just felt normal. It was wonderful. And why shouldn't it be?
Why shouldn't it be? Yes. we, as you say, we are friends out beyond these walls.
Yeah.
At school and other community events and.
Yeah. Well, many of the people that I do business with now are Catholics. And so I rub them down frequently about how Catholics can't manage the weather very well, but that's just part of being in the community of a faith community.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, as we wind down our conversation, is there anything else you'd like to share about your history at St. John's? Anything we've missed? Other leadership roles, favorite music, special times.
Oh, I think some of the cantatas that Carolyn Jennings put together, I mean, over a long haul, they were really wonderful.
Bach cantatas. With orchestra.
And what was the one by Christopher Smart? Rejoice in the Lamb.
Yeah.
Just amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think keep that moving forward. And I think we do something here in this church that not too many other churches in town can do, and that is to have a full-time minister of music. And I've been asked several times, how does St. John's afford that? And my comment is, it's not so much affordability, it's commitment. If you're committed to this component of our church and you do it, that's what our expectations are.
And we have been blessed to have two full-time musicians now, Dan Fenn and now Nathan. They are both servants of God and very intentional in how music is planned for the service. It is just, it's wonderful.
It's very impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, the hymn that is sung this morning is part of an anthem, for instance, that the adult choir is saying. Mm-hmm. That's all intentional. Nathan is wonderful.
Yeah, intentional.
My church background, there, I'm sure the pastoral staff was intentional, but there was no worship planning group like the pastors and the musicians and the youth and the childhood education, all of those people together to talk about, well, let's have a strand for these next Sundays. It was basically whatever the pastor felt like preached about, and it was usually Old Testament.
So there is a theme within of reaching out within the group, like you say, the pastors and the musicians and other church leaders, in addition to reaching out. I'm just realizing myself now, they practice that within to, and then without, reaching out into our community.
Yeah.
Several of our conversations have, the folks have commented on the reaching out has grown and grown and grown, mm-hmm. reaching out into the community mm-hmm. here. And that sounds like that's how they operate within, the church leaders here within this building.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. We need to support that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice to know that every Sunday you get your dose of the lesson, the epistle or the letter to the believers, and then the gospel.
Mm-hmm. And even the children's message is always integrated. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate your word, intentional. It is very intentional. It seems not happenstance. Sometimes when I'm sitting in the pew and I'm singing a hymn, I'm thinking, oh, This really relates to this.
Yes, it does.
Yes, yes. Yes, and not being a musician, I mean, I love music here, but it isn't part of my nature to sing other than the hymns. So hopefully other folks in the congregation will also realize that intentionality. And going back to what you said, Dave, earlier about was there any kind of push to add a contemporary service, and that in your words, it was some of the music that was so stabilizing to the traditional service that it really, there wasn't a need to branch out.
Mm-hmm. We did do Marty Haugen's service, but again, it was intentional that when that service happened, not every Sunday, but it was done at both services, not just at the first service or just at the second, so that each Sunday, it didn't matter which service you went to, it would be the same format, and therefore not dividing us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As subtle as those things are, they certainly have had a really an inclusive message and result.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to bring out.
Well, I also like the idea that we have the tactile experience of holding a hymn book with the music. And granted, there are some folks that's kind of hard to see, and the arthritic thumbs don't hold the book very well. But I think it's kind of a, I don't know, subconscious thing. Holding a book is nice.
There's a lot of holiness in that book. Holiness. H-O-L-I-S.
In addition, when you have the hymn book in front of you with all four parts written out, then you can sing, as I do very often, I'll sing soprano on the first verse, alto on the second, and then I'll sing tenor an octave up on the third, and then probably go back to soprano for the fourth, because usually Nathan will do another harmonization. But if you have the words and just the melody line on the screen, there's no possibility to do that. And this is a singing congregation. It is a singing congregation.
Yeah. I was thinking about that this morning when Nathan stopped playing on one of the hymns, and I thought, if this had been someplace else, if the organ or the piano stops, I'll bet the congregation would stop. But
not
St.
Here.
John's, we just barrel ahead. Mm-hmm. And
tell the story of your father when he came to Lenten service one time. You don't remember?
No.
The organist dropped out, and Ole kind of looked around and realized, oh, people are singing. And he just lifted his book and sang out.
Yeah.
Lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Yeah. He was a singer. He sang in the Waldorf College Choir with Ruth Stead. And in my previous church, my childhood church, singing was not particularly held up as a cool thing to do.
Oh.
It was just kind of...
interesting.
Yeah.
Now that I wouldn't associate that with a church, not necessarily.
Yeah. No, it's disturbing to go to some of the contemporary churches and see so many people just standing there, just letting the praise band entertain you.
Well, I find that kind of music difficult to sing with, because it is meant to be more off the cuff kind of, and that's hard to do as a unit. If you are a soloist, you can do embellishments and so on, but to sing that type of music with many people is extremely difficult.
So the music here has been very intentional and sustainable.
Yep.
And it will be.
And supportive to our faith.
Yes, yes.
Which is the big thing, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to see what happens out front of St. John's when they redo the street. Wondering if that will motivate people to drive. That's kind of, I think maybe we should give that one a try.
Because there will be, we won't be able to go on Third Street. Is that what you're meaning?
No, we'll be able to drive Third Street, but the street is going to be configured differently bump outs and limestone bench seating and.
That's right.
A plaza in front of the Arts Guild and who knows?
Of course, I'd forgotten that. Well, there's a little bit of the future of St. John's is yet to be defined, I guess, because of the street paving. Not many churches could say that.
Yeah. And I think we can be thankful that in the future, there will be pastors like Pam and Jonathan who rise up. And I think we have a couple of really dandies now.
We have been blessed with many good pastors.
Yes. Well, thank you, Dave and Ruth, for sharing your story and your family's story as part of the St. John's Church sesquicentennial. I've really appreciated getting to know you and hearing your story.